I'm curious if you've heard of nonprofits offering refunds to events. We have an educational event that we charge $30 per person to attend, which helps us cover staff time, supplies, food, beverage, and any speaker costs. Recently, two people asked for a refund the day prior because they weren't going to be able to attend. I'm leaning toward providing a refund this time since we have no policy, but I'm curious to know what you'd recommend for future events.
I don't know. I mean, I think the answer to this one for sure is like, because you have no policy, you kind of have to do it.
Yeah. Agree.
And then I'd say just decide on a policy. I think like $30, I mean, I don't know. This is my privilege talking. I don't think $30 is that much. And so maybe like a no refunds policy would make sense. If you're talking about like, and if it, this was a, like a gala event, like this was the, like the annual gala and it's like you're selling $10,000 tables, then you for sure want no refunds, right? That's a big commitment that you don't want somebody to just be like, oh, it turns out this show dropped on Disney Plus, I'm going to stay home, right? Like that's, you don't want somebody to make that decision. You don't want to back out of your gala. But if it's an educational event, like maybe you want to give them a window and say, you know, there's no refunds within 48 hours of it or no refunds. I mean, I think this is just sort of personal preference and thinking about who your audience is. Is this just people coming? Is this your constituents or is this like members of the community? I don't know. I think I could go either way on this one. What do you think, Stacey?
Yeah, I'm leaning toward giving them an option. So having a policy in place, of course, and I like the idea of a no refund policy up to a certain, like, yeah, 48 or 72 hours in advance. And even I think people sometimes in today's day and age, like a consumer mindset is expecting like that you can do all the things right up to the last second, including cancel and get a refund. And so I think some of it is balancing it with, you know, you could have a nice little message that could go out with your no refund policy. That's just like, you know, due to the, you know, nature of our work and the modest price per ticket, you know, but this is still a resource intensive process. And, you know, and so we'd ask, you know, that's why we have this policy, sort of explaining to people, but also perhaps even saying like, why not? Here's an option. Like, if you don't want to, if you want to still know you're helping a good mission, because I think, again, like you get people in this that are thinking about it from a consumer mindset versus a potentially a donor mindset, like of actually helping contribute to this type of education, to your mission. So to me, maybe it's not like, maybe there's a way to just say, hey, in lieu of refunds, we ask that you, you know, if you absolutely want a refund, we'll do it within 72 hours, but we'd encourage you instead to, you know, can you just make this an outright donation? And this helps cover the cost for these types of like events. I would give that option because I think people don't always like think about it like that. And then you kind of go, oh yeah, like I like these events. I want them to be around in the future. I want to help like the cause. But again, it's hard not, you know, without knowing exactly who people are, like if this is just kind of like a random community event, education event that no one has a tie to your mission, they're going to be like, who cares, right? But if it's like people that are more like care and that are on your mailing list, and this is sort of like a, or maybe it's a, even like a, I don't know, like a, I'm saying a donor, but like it's some tool where you're like hoping to build your database for, you know, kind of annual gift donors or something, then yeah, maybe you look at, like, to me, you've got to think about what is, where, who are these people coming to these events and where are you trying to go with them? And if it's truly just like we're educating everyone and anyone, then maybe it's just a flat out refund policy. But if it's something where you're like trying to build a relationship where it's with people who care and know about you, then maybe you offer them a donation option instead. And I don't know, like I'm thinking it's something like that, because at the end of the day, what you don't want, it's sad, but it's sad to say, but people have this negative reaction. Like, so you sit there and you go, okay, if this was someone that maybe regularly attends your events and they just happen to not be able to go to this one and you say no refund, like, and it sticks with them, and they were potentially someone who could have, you could have, you know, evolved into an annual gift donor or some other larger strategy, then I go, what a shame for just, you know, $30 or whatever it was. Like, to me, that feels a little short-sighted. So I always like to think a little more like, where are we going? Or is this just a one-off event? And I think that makes a difference.
Nonprofit governance.
Nonprofit answers.
Nonprofit board.
Nonprofit management.
Nonprofit marketing.
Nonprofit resources.
Welcome to Nonprofit Everything, the podcast where hosts Andy Shurick and Stacy Wedding answer your questions about all things nonprofit.
Welcome to another episode of Nonprofit Everything. I'm Andy Shurick, and I'm here with my fantastic co-host Stacy Wedding, and we're here to answer whatever questions you might have about the nonprofit sector. Are you a funder that is interested in learning more about what these nonprofits do and how you can make a better impact with your dollars? Or are you, like most of us, just in the grind trying to figure out how to get the job done and just need some external advice from somebody who doesn't necessarily have a stake in what you're doing and is giving you like real true answers? The way this podcast works, it's a Q&A podcast. You send us questions and Stacy and I do our best to answer them. Or if we think we aren't going to do a great job, or we think it's a good opportunity to bring in a guest expert, we will bring in a guest expert to answer those questions for you as well. So please send the questions to us. That's how the podcast works. If you don't send us questions, we don't have anything to talk about, and we'll just kind of dry up and blow away, and that wouldn't be fun at all. And with that, we'll jump right in. Help! Our staff meetings can be snoozers. We're a larger organization, and I oversee several mid-level managers who seem more eager to get the work done and view meetings as a waste of time. Are meetings a thing of the past? What are your ideas for structuring an effective, engaging staff meeting?
Ooh. I will answer this, but I am so wildly curious to hear what you have to say, Andy. So I will chime in. No, right? Like, I don't think meetings are a thing of the past, but I think the purpose or the reason we use meetings has changed. I mean, look at the environment we're in, where there are a lot of different kinds of platforms or communication channels that, you know, you hear a lot of teams that are on Slack channels or, you know, Discord or whatever, you name it, you name the platform, people are on it for things that are still accomplish a lot of communication without needing to actually, quote, meet. So I think just technology has changed it, right? And our need for, like, really thinking about when do we need a meeting? And so that's my first answer, is I don't think they're a thing of the past, but I think being more intentional and judicious, and what's happening is I think some people are trying to, like, marry the old ways of meetings all the time with the new ways of, oh, we're trying to communicate more. And that's like creating like double work for people, right? It's like, what the heck? Like, which channel is it? Which vehicle are we using for what? And so I think that's the larger systemic issue, is like, what is the purpose of the meeting, right? Like, why are we having meetings, and when does it make sense to have meetings? So in my mind, it needs to start with that conversation. Like, what are the norms for, like, when do we hold meetings? When do we do it in another way? And if we do it in another way, how do we do it? What do you think, Andy?
And I think you're exactly right. I mean, the coming up with the purpose for the thing is, I mean, that's almost the answer to every question on the podcast, right? We could answer every question with like just a static, well, why are you doing that?
Yes. Why?
Yeah. That would be the, so, I mean, and this isn't like a nonprofit specific question either. This is a every organization ever, yes, question. And what we've noticed is that meetings have never gone away. Like, if it's something that everybody does and they all do it all the time and they all complain about it, but it never goes away, it means there's probably some purpose for it. So, I mean, I think you're exactly right that with the opening up of multiple channels, being able to have meetings in 26 different ways, instead of whittling it down and going, what's the most effective way to communicate what we need to communicate? They just do all of them, right? Yes. So we got a newsletter that you're supposed to read. And have you checked the intranet? As long as those are still a thing, right? Have you checked like, yeah, our internal, yeah, Slack channel and the, yeah, message board and Yammer and all Teams? There's a special section and you're supposed to do this. And I mean, it's exhausting and nobody's got time for it, which is why your staff is like, you know what? Is there a way we could just do our jobs and not whatever this is? Which I totally get. That's my,
I mean,
sort of my default position on anything like that. Oh, it's a meeting, right? I was just about to finish something and then I have to go over here, right? And sit for an hour and listen to somebody yam about something I don't care about at all. And then I'm going to go back to my office and completely have forgotten what I was working on, which means I need to start over, right? So that's my sort of base like dislike of being interrupted and when I'm in the flow. So, you know, coming up with idea behind it, I don't think they're impossible to get rid of. I think it's possible to just decide you're not going to do meetings anymore, but you may be losing the, especially now, the opportunity for staff to like talk to each other as humans. So I work with one organization and let's hope they don't listen to the podcast. And they are very remote and they've been remote since before the pandemic. There's some people on site. There are a lot of people that are off site that work from whenever you have like a call with them or something, you can see they're at home. And they have some of the most amazing communication challenges, like things that are like, why are you calling me and paying me to solve this problem for you when you could just call somebody that works for you and have a conversation about it and get it solved without having to have a consultant involved, right? Mm-hmm. It seems totally crazy to me. And it's because and one of the things that they don't have is that frequent face-to-face interaction between people about stuff. So coming up with the reason for it, like maybe the reason is that like everybody's going to behave better when they're within punching distance of each other than if they're just on the phone, like, or texting or emailing or dropping a snotty emoji in Teams or something, right? Like whatever the thing is that's making culture get weird, like maybe like talking somebody face to face is a better way to interact. So I don't think there's an answer to your problem. I certainly sympathize with you for sure. But just don't have them for no reason. I'd say don't just do them for fun. I wouldn't do that.
Well, and what I love is that you're actually asking this question, because what I think is more common, at least from what I see, is that you see organizations that just continue doing the same old, mm-hmm. and like, right, they're not even actually reflecting going, is this still working? Like this mm-hmm. worked for a while. When does this work best? Right. Like having some of those conversations I think is so important. And I think of meetings being most valuable when you think of things like if you're generating ideas, like here's the problem we're solving for and here's some ideas we need to brainstorm. And like that's got some energy in a meeting that you can't get just as one person doing it, right? Like we're doing it sort of on this one-off email your ideas, then email yours. You lose that asynchronous sort, like that beautiful, like, you know, just kind of mix that happens. So I think things like that are, let's brainstorm, let's idea generate, let's invent together, let's actually discern, let's figure out where something's broken or why it's not working, and let's discuss that. Like those feel like they're discussions, right? That are really something that gets lost just by, you know, any written channel. You lose some of that. You lose the nonverbals of that. You lose just the full person being there for that. And I think, so thinking about more strategically, like how is it, when do you need to do those? And those probably aren't all the time, right? Like you're not every day coming up with new, but I do think like, God help us, right? We don't want another like meeting that could have been an email. We've heard that expression, right? But everyone's mm-hmm. like, no, another meeting that could have just been an email sharing where I'm at, like my status of this project or whatever, like whatever channel. But like, you don't need a meeting for that. And, you know, unless the project's stuck for some reason, then maybe there's a meeting. But I think to your point, Andy, it also makes sense. There's sort of that human connectedness thing. And so sometimes you hear organizations talk about getting siloed, depending on their size, right? Like, are they siloed or positions siloed? Could it help to understand not what everyone's doing on their day-to-day task list, but could it help to understand like big picture solving things together from each of your respective sort of areas? Because let's be honest, we know that finance and fundraising and marketing and programs, none of this happens in a box. Like you all need other parts of it. So thinking about that, but that's a different level. What I think happens is people don't know how to design meetings like that. So instead you get people going, okay, so finance, you update on what you're doing. And then it defeats the purpose. Like, and so-and-so, you go through your to-do list. It's like, no, like that's not helping anybody. So anyway, I'm glad that you're reflecting on it. I think there are purposes. So no, we're not saying kill all meetings, but yeah, maybe kill half of them.
Yeah. I'm going to add one thing too, is that one organization I was at, we had a status meeting, and we very intentionally said, and I was on executive, so I got to say this, like, this isn't an update meeting. I don't want you to come in and tell me what your team is doing. Like, I don't want you to come report stats. I don't want you to show up with a PowerPoint deck where you're going to walk through what you did. This is a meeting about asking other people about what they're doing and finding out how you guys need to work together. Like, this is sort of a collaboration meeting. So think about it as a collaboration meeting. And it was almost impossible. You'd walk in and people would have a deck and they'd walk through and they'd tell you what their stats were. In the last week, we did 19 phone calls and we talked to 263 people. And you're like, That's not what we're doing here. Right. We're here to communicate about what we're working on so that we can see what other people are working on and make sure there's, you know, we're not missing any opportunities or things like that. And every single week it was the exact same problem. And it wasn't the same person either. It was like somebody would come in and they'd be like, okay, so here's my stats. I'm like, no, that's not it. We're not doing that. So it's really hard to get people off of that. Sort of, and part of, and this is what I thought it was too. I thought a big chunk of it was everybody sort of justifying their existence, especially in a big organization. You walk into a meeting and you have to like pretend like you've been really busy for the last 2 weeks and tell everybody all the things you did in the last 2 weeks, or else they'll think you just sat around and did nothing. Right. So unless you like have a deck with stats and all this kind of stuff, you're completely useless. And I mean, you try not to run an organization like that, but that's kind of what people just default to. I'd love to come up with a way to solve that sort of like, you know, this isn't a status meeting. Stop pretending it's a status meeting. But I could never figure out a way.
Don't you think though, Andy, and you're so right. And that is so real and such a like thing that happens. And so I go, I mean, don't you think part of it is repetition? Like, you don't just expect, if people have been doing something for so long, like sometimes it takes, and then like figuring out how do you model it? So I'm a huge believer of this, right? Like the first person who's going to talk, hopefully, like, and pick your superstar, I don't care, or you do it, right? Like, but have someone model it who's going to do it the right way. So everyone has that to follow, because what happens, and I mean, this is a segue, a tangent, but it's still tied to meetings, right? You're at a meeting, you tell everyone, like, whatever, share these like three things, and you get someone who talks about like all the other things on top of it. And you're like, no, you just started this off. Right? You didn't share the three things we asked you to share. And now other people are going to follow that pattern. Like, people just follow, right? So like, I think being intentional about, if you have a rock star, someone who's really good at like doing, like taking something and sort of modeling it, like, or you do that, like doing that. The other thing that I was just kind of going to riff off of Andy, what you were saying, is I was thinking, how many times do you think staff meetings don't work because they don't have a voice, right? Like, there's not a true voice. Like, it's like a meeting for meeting's sake, like check the box. But like, do we actually really, are you going to say something, or we're going to actually listen to it or actually take it in? Like, you brought up a really good point. Now, crap, that means we're going to have to rethink maybe how we're approaching this. And that gets us off the checking off our to-do list train. But like, maybe we need to do that, right? Like, so I feel like sometimes we have these meetings, but, and then that's where you get staff that are like totally demoralized and disenfranchised. Why am I going to even speak up at a meeting? Because no one's going to listen to what the hell I say anyway, right?
Yeah. Or like the ED's executive assistant put it on the calendar, so we all have to show up.
Yes.
Like, that's apparently when she's available. So I guess we're all going to go too.
Well, I think you and I have been through our share of painful meetings, which is why we've watched others doing it as well. And so you bring up a really big topic. If we could all solve for it. So I hope you'll take a couple of these suggestions. Tell us if you do, and tell us how it works, and maybe find that champion who can kind of kick off this new way of running meetings. We are a smallish organization with a staff of 12 people. For years, we prided ourselves on having a flat organizational structure without much hierarchy. This model was born out of our small size and my staff, many of whom are younger, who wanted to buck the hierarchical power dynamics that all too often exist in organizations with more traditional vertical hierarchies. Over the last few years, we've added a handful of more staff, and I now have 9 direct reports. This isn't productive or effective, and I'm considering moving to a more traditional staffing model. Is there a way to introduce this change without damaging morale long term?
Maybe. I don't know. And of course, you know, I'm going to always take it farther off topic than it probably needs to go. I don't think 9 direct reports is that bad. I think 9 direct reports is a reasonable number, provided that you're truly using like a flat structure where folks don't need to ask for your permission to do everything or don't need to constantly check in with you to make sure that they're doing their job right. So I think I would, if it were me, step back and take a look at your overall design and figure out what you want to get out of it. Because you've set it out as if, you know, you prided yourselves on having a flat org structure because you didn't want to just go into this sort of top down thing. But then you kind of hedge it with like, well, this is the kind of thing that young people do, and now we've outgrown it. So I don't know that you necessarily bought into it to begin with.
Yeah.
Based on the way the question is written.
That's a really good point.
so maybe it's not the structure that needs to change. Maybe it's you that needs to change and figure out like, is there some way that we can continue to like not torpedo the staff morale by making it a way that nobody likes? And is there a way that we can sort of support ourselves to be able to make decisions and communicate in a way that doesn't make it feel like having 9 direct reports is the end of the world? Because to be honest, if you have 9 really competent people who are doing a great job, the fact that they're not checking in with you and you don't have these long meetings and you don't have to worry about their, I mean, maybe it's just like review time came around and you're like, 9? No,
yeah.
You know, yeah. I get that feeling. Sure. But maybe it's not that. So like a couple of years ago, and it's been a while now, like Zappos sort of famously, Tony Hsieh decided that he wanted to use sort of a new structure. And it was very misreported. like being in Las Vegas, we got a different view of it than kind of the typical news media view, which was like, oh, they just like took away all job descriptions and everybody reports to nobody. And I mean, they made it sound crazy. But at root, what it was is that they gave everybody, sort of empowered everybody to solve problems without having to ask permission. So that's really what it came down to. So if something came about and they needed to solve it, they just got together and they solved it. Whatever group was there, they got together and solved it. And then if the same problem came up, it might be a different group that solved it a different way, but that then gives you sort of new data points about, okay, when they did it this way, this was the outcome. When we did it this way, this was the outcome, which is really interesting in a really big organization where you can kind of sort of A/B test your responses to different things. It was a really interesting thing. It got a lot of bad press because people just freaked out because it sounded very hippie. But, you know, and a lot of people did like freak out when it that were working at Zappos were not super excited about it at the time. But the core idea behind it, I thought was really interesting. Like whether you can take something like that, something where there really is no hierarchy, and move it to an organization that's really only 12 people. Like that's not, you know, you can't A/B test 12 people. 12 people are just, it's going to be the same people solving it the same way every time. So I don't know that you're getting that out of it. But giving people the sort of the responsibility and the trust to be able to do things without having to ask permission is, I think, what they liked about it to begin with, my opinion. That's probably what the staff liked about it to begin with. And so finding some way to keep that ethos in it and maybe take the burden of having to do 9 reviews off of you. Like maybe that's the problem. I'd try to see what the actual issue is before we just like go, yeah, we're just going back to a triangle. And you're now a senior manager, right? Or whatever it is. What do you think, Stacey?
Yeah, I'm going to say that doing that makes me nervous, right? Like thinking about going back into that, since you truly, and whether you have, you know, really embraced this model or not, you know, given what Andy said. But like the reality is if you have a staff that really was excited about this kind of non-traditional hierarchy, how do you keep, I mean, it needs to work for your organization. It's not just about making staff happy. But at the end of the day, like, what is or what isn't working with it from all, like, I think it'd be an interesting discussion. Like, what's working with this? Are you getting enough support? So for example, like you said, Andy, if all nine direct reports are self-sufficient and smart and problem solvers and initiators and all those things, then probably not much of an issue except review time. But if you have some that feel like they are needing more guidance or needing more mentorship or needing more support from their supervisor, then that's where this could become a time suck and an issue. And so because we don't know those dynamics, it's hard to know exactly what's going on, and maybe not all nine are high performing. So I do think Andy's right about going back to that basic question of sort of what is working with this, what isn't. Are there other ways to solve it that don't mean just going back to old school traditional model, right? Like, maybe there's different ways. Maybe those nine reviews, I mean, I know this is pretty, probably every HR, you know, professional will cringe at this, but maybe there's like times a year, like, could you break up the reviews so they're not all happening at the same time, or, you know, get on a different cycle? And I know that there's reasons we do it like all together. But the point is just thinking, I think, creatively, just like you thought creatively in setting this structure up to begin with, thinking creatively now feels like an opportunity. And, you know, long story short, if you end up just saying, no, I've already done all that, I've already thought through all this, we're moving forward to traditional, then I think the question, to your point of how you introduce this, needs to come from a place of, it can't be about just about you. So like, if it's all about, I am trying to relieve myself from, you know, this pain in the butt having to do nine reviews at once, and for all these reasons, like, I don't think that ever works with any kind of change. People need to understand why it makes sense holistically for the organization, why it's going to benefit them. Like, so I think any traditional sort of, like, you know, change management is perspective, is helping people understand what is it that is going to be positive for them in this change. What is it that you're trying to accomplish with this change? And who knows, if you have as progressive a staff as you do, they may even actually have some ideas you haven't thought of. So, but I do think being, you know, treading lightly if you do go down this path, because it will be a culture shock and probably, like, you know, create some upheaval that could become, you know, it's hard to retain staff these days. So if part of what is attractive to your staff of working there is the way you've set up the org model and the org chart and kind of the hierarchy and or lack thereof, like, how do you continue that or get creative about it? So I wish you luck. You know, we've piled on everything from, like, scrapping the whole thing and going back to ground zero to, if you do have to go this way, you still have a lot of work ahead of you, right? So.
Thanks for joining us today. Stacey and I really appreciate that you've taken your time out of your day to listen to us babble about nonprofit topics. We enjoy the fact that we get to do this. It makes us happy to do. It's always nice to kind of hang out and talk together. And please send us those questions. If you like the podcast, fantastic. Share it with folks. Go on to wherever you found this podcast and find the button to rate it. Or we have a couple of helpful links in the show notes, which are at nonprofiteverything.com. There's also information about if we mentioned any links or anything today, or further reading or resources like that. Those can be found in the show notes as well at nonprofiteverything.com. But yeah, share it, rate it. If you've got questions for us, send it to us. You can send them to questions@nonprofiteverything.com or find us on most of the socials. Or you can go to the Nonprofit Everything webpage, and there's a big yellow button that says Ask a Question, and you can click that, and it'll send us a question directly from the website as well. With that, we really appreciate that you've taken the time today, and we will talk to you again in a couple of weeks.